Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. So we will be back in the theater first Sunday of December, which I believe is December 5th. And then we're going to be back in the theater again on the 15th. That's on a Wednesday night. This year, instead of doing the big fabulous thing we do every year for Christmas that involves red carpet and celebrities and all that kind of stuff, this year we're going to do something I've actually always wanted to do, and that's to do a movie night at the theater. So I'm going to show you portions of certain, certain portions of certain movies that I like a lot and give you a little commentary. We're just going to do some goodies. I'm going to open it up. There's going to be no charge. We're doing it at 7 o'clock on the 15th. We're doing, instead of dressing up fancy, we're doing an ugly, hey Karen, hey mom. Instead of doing a fancy dress up thing like we normally do, we're going to do an ugly Christmas sweater night, ugly Christmas sweater contest. I bought one. Hey, Drea. A Vestal Goodman night. And it's too early for jokes. Stop it. I could do a Vestal Goodman. I'm building a bridge. Yes, I know all of that stuff. Hey, Freddie. Hey, Don and Susan Campbell. Oh, you guys are down in Jekyll Island. Yeah, I think. Hey, Kevin. Anyway, I bought an ugly sweater, and then Ken ordered one online, and his is so much better than mine. I gotta step up my ugly sweater game, so I may get a different one. Hey, Romanita. So, you may have a sweater that you don't think is ugly. You just wear it every Christmas. It probably qualifies. Get the scarf and the Aquanet. Oh, Lord, y'all have already had your coffee this morning, I can tell. Hey, Brenda. So anyway, that's going to be really good. I'm excited about that. Then we will be back in the theater first Sunday of January. And then we're going to be in Ellijay, Georgia for Meditation Weekend number 13. Hey, Greg. And what is that, the 22nd, 23rd? I'm not looking at my dates right now, but most of you already got your rooms. So, and this was a huge blessing. Jack and Jackie went up there to scope out where they were going to stay, and actually did me a favor because they went ahead and rented us or reserved us a meeting room there at the, I think it's Comfort Inn, so that we'll have, in case it's too cold to meet outside, which it probably will be in January, at least for any length of time. So we've got that to fall back on. And that was just, you know, I got to tell you, I know I kind of overdo the thank you thing maybe sometimes, but I really, hey, Cynthia, I really do, I just appreciate everything so much. I appreciate Jack and Jackie doing that. And they went and got rooms for us, which was a huge blessing, because I hadn't even looked at where we were going to stay yet. And earlier this week, you know, there's a thing we have to do every year with the IRS to make sure we keep our 501c3, for those of you that contribute directly to the ministry for your tax purposes. And, you know, I got the Avery made sure that I had the documents sent to me and I signed them, and I thought, this is really awesome. I've got people that want to help me. And Ken and I bought some new furniture this week, and just, you know, watching him assemble things, put things together, I'm just amazed that he can do all that. And I never take it for granted. And I don't know if Elwood's logged on today or not, but he did something special for me this week, and I sent so many thank you texts. He finally said, okay, got it. I'm like, no, I'm really blown away by it. It's an interesting thing about gratitude the more grateful you are, the less you actually take things for granted. It's like, it seems counterintuitive, because it would seem that if you've got a lot of people helping you, you would just get used to it and take advantage of it or take it for granted. And it actually does just the opposite. The more grateful you are, the more you realize how blessed you are to have people in your life who have your back and are really in covenant with you and are looking out for you and love you unconditionally. And, you know, they know your human side, but still celebrate your divine side. I mean, that's so awesome. And as I get older in earth years, those relationships become even more precious to me. I mean, they're just awesome. So anyway, if you want to be included, we've already got a good group signed up to go already. But if you want to be included for the meditation weekend in Ellijay, which is a gorgeous little town nestled up in the mountains, it's got lots of rivers and cute little historic area, and it's beautiful. And I don't do a Facebook doesn't do threads now like they were doing. Now you have to join a group. So if you want to be a part of it, you just let me know that you want to be, and I'll send you an invitation, put you on the group. One thing that was cool, Avery sent me something this week. A friend of hers who is in relationship with a Native American chief from Oklahoma. I'm not sure what tribe that is, but he was looking at her, at the pictures from our morning meditation in Chattanooga, you know, when it was so foggy. And he said, "What are those people doing?" And she said, "They're meditating." And he said, "The spirits are surrounding them in the mist." I thought that was so cool to have a shaman kind of guy be able to see really what we were seeing in the spirit that day. That was a very, that whole weekend was just amazing. And I'm expecting number 13 to be even better. Let's do some, I gave some insight last week in my teaching, which I will refer to again today, about the I am. When the Hebrew says I am that I am, there's actually an implication of I will be what I will be, meaning that when you declare the I am, you're declaring who you are in the eternal realm, but even that person is evolving. So when you say I am what I am, you're also saying I will be what I will be, meaning that as you evolve in the time realm, whatever you're going to face in the future, even if you're not able to deal with it right now, by the time you get to that thing, you will paparazzi. You will rise to the occasion, and you will meet that thing, because you are evolving. We've talked about last week about how God is evolving, the same way that the universe is expanding. It's very, very exciting concept. But there's such a power in the affirmations. So let's say, I am well, I am wellness, I am. I am healthy, I am health, I am. I am peaceful, I am peace, I am. I am serene, I am serenity, I am. I am joyful, I am joy, I am. I am anointed, I am the anointing, I am. I am evolving, I am evolution, I am. I am growing, I am growth, I am. I am free, I am freedom, I am. I love the energy that's on saying those things and bringing you up to the to the highest affirmation of your own divinity, and that is, I am. Yeah, that's good, Rhonda. I am stable. I am stability. I am. Good, 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 good. I love when you get it and you interact with me. Give me some breaths. We're going to inhale through the nose. Hold it. Exhale through the mouth. Let's go. Inhale. Hold. Exhale. In. Out. Oh, I felt that one. In. Out. The combination of the affirmations, the energy that you release verbally when you say those high vibrational words, the highest being I am, combined with the power of breath, it just, it's so powerful. And the more you do it, the more sensitive you can you become to it. Like in the couple of years now that we've been talking about meditation, and I don't honestly do it every day. I wish I could tell you I do it every single day. I don't. That wouldn't be true. But I do it a lot. And I have seen that the more I do it, the more I practice breath work, I get results from it quicker and more, they're more impactful. Like I can, if I feel anxiety, I can bring the anxiety level down in about 2 to 3 breaths and I automatically feel it. And a lot of times the things that happen around you, things that we used to consider spiritual warfare, it's just the universe reacting to and responding to your own personal anxiety. Proverbs says, out of the heart are the issues of life. So life isn't happening to you as much as it's responding to you. And a lot of times a situation that's not necessarily a bad thing becomes bad because of your anxiety. Your fear makes it worse. Your stress actually makes the thing worse. I've even learned this about my children. When I have a tendency to worry about them about something, I realize that the worry is actually counterproductive. You think you're being a good caretaker when you're worrying about loved ones, but you're actually sending negative energy to them so that the thing you fear for them actually comes to pass. Job said it about his own children. He said, the thing I feared came upon me. So it's really good to pause before you react to something. And my first book I wrote was Activating the Power of Life and Death, and we talked about how you don't necessarily have control over everything that happens to you, but you definitely have control over how the thing plays out by your reaction to it. So you know, if you drive to work every day, if you've got time alone, practice these affirmations. Let your ear hear your mouth saying these things. Faith comes by hearing, and the thing you hear the most is what you believe, end up believing. So say those things, prophesy your future, prophesy your own resurrection, and combine it with breath work, which is really all meditation is. And in the scriptures, breath and spirit are used interchangeably. And it's so powerful. I'm telling you, this isn't some kind of New Age mumbo jumbo. These are eternal truths. The power of high vibrational words and breath techniques. It's so next level, and it will work for you. What I want to talk about today, I want to refer to my teaching last week. It was a good teaching, but I left it feeling a little unsettled because I didn't get everything said that I wanted to say. Really, the bottom line is I was trying to do a month's worth of series in one teaching. But when I began to read your feedback, so many people said it was exactly what they needed to hear that I thought, all right, I'm gonna go with that reality. I'm gonna believe I said exactly what I wanted to say. But I do want to touch on something that I feel like I hurried through too much last week because of time. And that was on me. That wasn't you. I think those of you that really hear my voice would probably sit there as long as I talk. But I don't know what this helicopter's doing. He's swirling around me. Is this the new thing? Instead of having hawks over me, I got copters. Anyway, life in the city. Last week I talked about when Jesus spoke to John on the Isle of Patmos, and he revealed himself this way. He says, I am, which is the statement of eternalness. But within the eternalness, he says, I am the Alpha and the Omega. Alpha, that was the A and the Z in Greek. So he's saying that within my infinity is finite reality. I am is up here. Alpha and Omega is here. And, you know, even in Hebrews 12, there's the phrase, looking unto Jesus, who is the author and finisher of our faith. I want to talk specifically about this because I ended up touching on race issues and stuff, and I felt like that didn't make sense. And there was a reason I was going there, because I wanted to specifically talk about closure. Closure is something that is great when you can get it. It's not always guaranteed. I will say this, that in Jesus' earth walk, Jesus was all about closure. Like for instance, and when I say closure, I'm talking about a situation having a beginning and an end, a resolution to it. Judah and I were talking about it this week. Sometimes we compare pastoral notes. And he's in a different dimension than I'm in now, but there's still a lot of similarities, and I certainly have been where he is now. And we were talking about the people that come to your church and just end up ghosting you and never tell you why they left or why they stopped supporting. And when you follow up on them, they say, no, everything's fine, my season's over, but you know they're not really upfront with you about what's going on, which is unfortunate, because sometimes if they would just tell you what the deal breaker was with them being in your ministry, it might be something you need to know. But if they never tell you, you never see it, because you're seeing everything from your vantage point. And I told him, because he's experienced it some, I said, let me tell you something, you never get used to it. And my landscape is littered with relationships that I have no idea what happened to them. I have no idea what I did, if anything at all. And they never did tell me. And, you know, it just is what it is. And so you end up having all of this unfinished business. And you can't always get it. And sometimes you have, in relationships, you have to just move on without it and say, all right, closure's not coming. I'm never going to be able to make sense of what that was about. So I'm just going to have to move on. However, if you can get it, and especially if you can give it, it matters. I know of married couples that go through divorce and still go to counseling, still go to therapy, so that they at least understand what happened to the marriage. And I think that's actually pretty smart. It doesn't, I mean, in some cases, irreparable damage is done to where it can't be fixed and they're gonna have to move on. But at least they know what happened so that they don't take that baggage into the next relationship. I think that's actually pretty smart. And when I mentioned about Jesus with closure, like, I'll give you a couple of examples. There was the story about when the 10 lepers came to Jesus. And it says that he spoke a word over them, said, go show yourself to the priest. And it says that as they were going, they were healed. They noticed in their bodies that they were healed. It was not an instantaneous healing, but it was a healing nonetheless. And so out of that 10, one of them returned to Jesus and said, thank you. Because they, I mean, leprosy was horrible. Leprosy, in a lot of ways, was much worse than HIV or AIDS. Because not only did you die from it, but everybody knew you had it, and you were ostracized from the community, and you had to go. I mean, it was horrible. I mean, you couldn't, at least people who have certain diseases now can still be integrated into society. But in with leprosy, you had to, I mean, you were required by law to tell people that you were unclean before you before they approached you. I don't know what, some of these people that refused to wear masks, I don't know what they would have done in the leprosy days. Because if you want to punch somebody out just wearing a piece of cloth, I can't imagine what you would have done if you were actually unclean. But anyway, so it was a big deal for someone to be healed. And so Jesus doesn't say you're welcome. He says, well, weren't there 10 of you? In other words, where are the other 9? Let me tell you something. Thank you is so important. If you've done something for me that I forgot to thank you for, please let me know, because I hate that kind of thing. I don't want to be, I don't need to be fawned over if I do something for somebody. There is something about the resolution of someone saying thank you. Did you get the money I sent you? Did something happen with the thing I prayed about? I mean, it really does matter. It's not about self-aggrandizement. I think if Jesus could say, where are the other 9 that should have at least acknowledged this? I don't think there's anything wrong or petty about saying, yeah, if I do something for you, acknowledge it. That's just not only courtesy, it's humanity to do that. Nobody wants to feel like they're just taken for granted. Even, you know, Ken and I, we're about to celebrate our 7th wedding anniversary. We've been together nearly 10 years. And we say thank you probably more than anything else in our relationship. I mean, we always, like if he picks up dinner, I always say thank you, vice versa. And just everything, you know, like this morning when he brought me a cup of coffee, it was like, thank you. You know, I really appreciate it. I could walk over there and make the coffee, but it's something, there's just like this little exchange in a relationship of somebody saying, I see you, you matter to me. Here's a small gesture, and it doesn't require writing a note. It's just the simple expression of thanks. The more you express thanksgiving, the more you attract things for which to be thankful. If you go through life thinking that everybody's out to get you, that nobody's for you, if you walk around with a chip on your shoulder and a victim mentality, all you're going to do is cause yourself to be more victimized. And another case of Jesus with closure, probably the most profound, is after the resurrection. It's in John's gospel. It says that the disciples go fishing because they're lost after the crucifixion. They don't know what to do, so they say, "Well, let's go fishing." They're fishing all night, and Peter looks out on the beach and he sees a figure standing on the beach that he recognizes as Jesus. And you know, the thing about Peter's personality is he was very spontaneous, and it could get him in trouble. It could also cause him to be amazing. The same guy that gets up and cuts a man's ear off in the Garden of Gethsemane is also the first one to stand up on the day of Pentecost and say, this is that which is spoken by the prophet Joel. It says that when he saw Jesus, he was so glad to see him, he just jumped out of the boat and swam to him, forgetting that their last interaction was when he had denied that he knew Jesus. And You know, sometimes, I don't know if this happens to you, it has happened to me a lot. People, not nobody from Metron. I can tell you this, in 8 years, in we're into our eighth year, in nearly 8 years, this has not happened with one person at Metron. So I'm not talking about anybody in my current world now. But back in the day, you know, back in the, I don't know if other churches still do this, but back in church days, you used to get a lot of letters, and they usually weren't good. You know, it was before somebody left the church, they're going to tell you every grievance they've had with you for the last 20 years. Like, and there was this one time you were standing with some people and you didn't speak to me. Like, and you know, I used to think, good Lord, how long have you been building a case against me to have all of these indictments? And sometimes they would be so ludicrous that I wouldn't even answer them. I'd just be like, good God, you know, like if I thought I was the person that you just described in that letter, I would go isolate myself. The guy that you just described is so bad that he doesn't need to be loose in society. And what used to really be weird is people, people would, I would see them later after they'd written me these letters that just made you want to pass out. They were so horrible. And then they would like act like nothing happened. Like, hey Bishop, how you doing? And I would think, oh my God, really? Are we talking? Sometimes you'll see somebody at a funeral or something and they'll say, hey Bishop, you know, I love you. And I'm like, really? Cause I got like this 14-page letter from you that didn't say nothing about loving me. And I think sometimes people get caught up in the moment. They want to think you forgot what they said. Well, let me tell you something. You don't forget. You do not forget. And all it takes is somebody saying, hey, you know that horrible letter that I wrote you all those years ago? Look, I was in a really weird place at the time. That was not about you. That was about me. Are we good? And all somebody has to do is acknowledge it. And I know in my own case, I'm like, oh, we're so good. Thank you for acknowledging it. And honestly, in the midst of all of the horrible stuff you said, there probably were a couple of things I needed to pay attention to. So it's okay. I'm like, it's all good. But let's just don't pretend like it didn't happen. That's what makes me feel like I'm taking crazy pills sometimes. The Metron people are next level. This I'm talking about church people. And so, you know, I guess Peter's, when he sees Jesus, just going to play it off like, Jesus, I'm so glad to see you. And Jesus is like, Peter, do you love me? And Peter's like, yeah, of course. Why would you ask that? And Jesus asks him three times, which is clearly a reference to the three times that Peter denied him. And it was an intense conversation enough that by the third time Jesus asked, Peter actually broke down and cried because he knew exactly what Jesus was referring to. And all Jesus was saying, he wasn't trying to make Peter feel horrible. I mean, he'd already prophesied it. Remember, he said, Peter, you know, before the rooster crows, you're going to deny me three times, but let not your heart be troubled. There's still going to be a room. Gospel singers translated as mansions in heaven. It's not the word mansion. It's the Greek word mone, M-O-N-E, which means a place of ministry. Jesus knew it was going to happen. He said, I know you think you mean what you're saying. Because Peter had said, they can all deny you, I never will. And Jesus said, I know you think you mean that, but you're actually going to do it three times before morning. But it's okay. You're not going to disqualify yourself from the ministry. This is not going to sever our relationship indefinitely. And really, that's what he was saying to Peter on the beach, because he says, if you love me, then feed my sheep. In other words, whatever this moment of humanity has not disqualified you for the ministry. But he was demanding Peter acknowledge it. He's basically saying, before I move on into this next phase of my I am-ness. I just need to know on a human level, is all that stuff that I felt was real between us, was it real? Did it mean anything? You know, there's a part of Peter that probably thought, why would this even matter to you now? I mean, you clearly are who you said you were. I mean, I watched you get crucified. 72 hours later, you're back. So clearly, you are the Christ. Why would it matter if I love you? Well, apparently, it did matter. Now, I said all that to say, to bring it to this scripture, and it's in the Gospels, the four Gospels that we have in our canon. There are recorded seven last statements of Jesus on the cross. And if you put them in chronological order, the sixth one is found in the 19th chapter of John chapter 19, verse 30, where he says, "It is finished." I don't know if Rutherford's on. I can't. Oh, hey, Hallie. Oh, I was wondering where you are. Hallie's in Athens, Greece. He just got off of a tour and is going on another tour. I mean, a cruise. But he found another great cruise in between. And he texted me the other day. He said, "Listen, this other cruise came available and I'm thinking about taking it. Does that sound crazy?" I said, "No, if it's something you enjoy doing and it's also related to what he does," because he has a travel blog. I said, "If you can do it, you've got the time and you can afford it," because cruises are actually very cost effective. You can get a lot of great cruises for less than what I paid for two nights of a hotel in Chattanooga. I said, "Yeah, if you could do it, don't second guess yourself. You know, go enjoy it." And I think, what are you going to, Dubai or where? And so, like, yeah, if you enjoy it, it's nobody's business. Cruise it up, baby. Anyway, I was wondering if you were going to be on today. But anyway, I don't know if Rutherford's on here today, but in one of our recent conversations, he was telling me about a sermon he preached from John 19:30 about you have to declare a thing is finished before you can move on to the next thing. And that's what I was trying to say last week, even about closure. Sometimes you deal with a thing, like, for instance, like, let's say something horrible happens to somebody, like they lose a child or there's a terrible accident or something. It's unrealistic to say to that person, you know, just get over it and move on. Like, there's a part of your grief that will never go away. You'll learn how to process it. You'll learn how to live with it, coexist with it. But just to say, you know, it'll get better. No, there's some things that are so horrible, they won't get better. You have to learn how to work with them. That's why I think sometimes therapy really is the way to go, because a therapist can give you the tools to figure out how to integrate something in your life that's probably going to be with you forever. It's a little bit different with parents. Like, when an elderly parent dies, you could miss them every day, but it's a little bit different because you know that's something that's going to happen. You know, your grandparents are going to die, your parents are going to die, you're going to die. Those are things that are not that, I mean, you can get to the other side of that. There are other things that, no, you're not going to, it's not going to go away, so you've got to learn how to make it a part of your daily routine and not let it destroy you. There are other things, though, like a failed marriage, like a relationship gone badly, like the end of a season, that you can get closure on, even if the other person doesn't want to participate in the closure. You can come to an end to it. I always thought it was interesting that story about David after the baby died. It talks about how many days he wept, and it says then there was a time where he washed his face and got up. So there comes a time, and only you know when that time is right for you. Nobody can pull the butterfly out of the cocoon prematurely. There is a time to heal, and everybody's time to heal is different. And there are things you go through. I was even, my ex-mother-in-law, Shirley Flanders, she transitioned earlier this week on 11/11. And Debbie and I have talked several times in the last few days because her, Shirley's service will be next Saturday. Judah's her pastor now. Judah will be doing it, but I'll be participating in it. And we were just talking about it, and Debbie was saying that, she said, I haven't slept in so long, and I've been on edge, and, I was last night thinking about the service and everything, and I said, you're going to have to give yourself permission to rest and relax and realize that you're not having to worry about her now. You can be in that mode for so long. It's kind of like over there in Psalm 124 when it says, when the Lord turned the captivity of Zion, we were as them that dreamed. Meaning, they've been slaves for so long, they didn't know how to not feel like slaves. And you can be in caretaker mode for so long that you don't know how to just relax and go back to living and not sort of being on edge. And she'll get through it. It's a rite of passage. But I said, losing a parent, I was referring to a lot of things I went through with my dad. And I said, there's definitely PTSD that you deal with. Everybody's situation is different. But there is a time where you do put closure and you move on to the next thing. And I think there's something in each of those seven statements of Jesus that are probably just applicable to life in general. And there is a time when you have to make the declaration from your cross, whatever the thing is that you've had to lay down, where you finally say, it's finished. I'm not going to worry about this anymore. I'm not going to grieve over this person anymore. I'm not going to second guess myself over this anymore. I can't keep doing this. I have to declare it is finished. And the statement after that was, into your hands I commend my spirit, which to me speaks of going to the next incarnation, commending your spirit in a thing, saying, I am detaching myself from this thing that I was or this thing that I experienced. And I am speaking my own closure. No matter what you believe about hell or salvation, whether you believe in Christian universalism or not, or inclusion, or whatever you want to call it, if for no other reason than Jesus said it is finished, that should be enough. That one declaration should be enough to unite any follower of Jesus to realize there's no battle with sin and the devil going on. Now the God of this world is cast down. When you read the book of Revelation, read it through the paradigm of Jesus saying, it's finished. Whatever it was that mankind needed, I don't believe a sky god needed it. I believe people who were still in their minds scrambling through the Garden of Eden trying to find some fig leaves to sew together needed a naked man to die on the cross and say, you are now righteous, so that we could identify with that. Which is why, I wear a cross mainly because this particular one has sentimental value to me, and it also keeps me connected somewhat with a community that I'm not totally a part of anymore. And I'm fine with not being a part of it, because I think there's a lot of it that's totally wood, hay, and stubble. But when people become too cross conscious and they're cherishing the old rugged cross or something, I'm like, namaste, if that's what you want to do. But when Jesus said, "It's finished," that worked for me. I don't think Jesus is on the cross now. I don't think he's trying to decide my fate. I think whatever he authored, he finished. Whatever he alphaed, he omegaed. Under the umbrella of his I am-ness, there was a beginning and an end to it. And because of that, I can go from glory to glory. I can end a thing and know that it's over and not cry over it and not long for it. I can honor my memories without living in the past. I can learn my lessons from the mistakes that I've made without punishing myself for them. I can allow myself the humanity. I can accept my own humanity enough to allow myself to forgive myself so that I can move on. Something as simple as just the way I felt after there. If you've never taught, you will not know what I'm talking about. But there's a way you feel when you know that you've said it all and you leave. It's sort of like the way athletes feel when they leave it all in the field and you walk out of there. I didn't feel that way last Sunday when I walked out of there. I thought, that was a little clumsy there. Then I didn't say that the way that I was feeling it. But then when I begin to read how many people said, "No, you said it exactly the way that I needed to hear it," I thought, all right, then I'm going to accept that. I'm going to lay that anxiousness down. I mean, I love myself too much to beat myself up. I'm not going to do that. But I like to bring my A game. I mean, I respect you enough that I want to give you the best. And I feel like most of the time, nearly 100% of the time, I do give you the best. And when I don't perceive that it's the best, sometimes I have to change my perception of it. And I think, well, it must be the way they needed to hear it. So I'm gonna say it is finished. I'm not gonna drag the feelings from last Sunday into this Sunday. That was then, this is now. And I can honor the past, acknowledge the past, learn from the past, but I can also declare it is finished. It is finished. That's why I haven't been asked this in a long time, but I went through a little period where people have asked me, "Do you miss church in the now?" And I have to say, not at all, not ever. I don't think about it. I don't dream about it. When I drive by, like if I'm going out to where Ken works, I'll drive by, I'll look at it, and I think it's beautiful. And you know, I remember drawing out those buildings and telling somebody what I wanted to build. I'm very proud of it. I loved what we did there. I don't long for it. That was then, this is now. I loved what it was. I honor what it was, but I don't miss it at all. That doesn't mean I don't respect it. It means I'm so fully present where I am now that it would dishonor my current reality to be longing for the past. One little verse of scripture that I like a lot, it's in the Gospel of Luke. It's just three words: remember Lot's wife. And it means, the thing is, if you've ever been to that part of the world, you could totally see how natural events that took place or natural phenomena, how people created mythology about them. And when you go there to the Dead Sea, it's got such a high salt content that these stalagmites of salt grow up out of the water. They're all along the beach, and they have all these shapes. They don't look like stalagmites in a... I'm not even sure stalagmites is the word. But you know, a stalagmite in a cave is the thing that points up. Stalactite is what comes down. But I call them stalagmites, but they're like these columns of salt. And sometimes they're like cloud formations. Sometimes you look at them and you think, that looks like a person. That looks like a person's face, because they're kind of lumpy and, you know, they look like a person. And you could totally see how the mythology of Sodom and Gomorrah, because even in history, that area had an incredible meteor shower at a certain time in history, which very well could have been interpreted as the wrath of God coming down on that city. And so the mythology came that Lot's wife turned into a pillar of salt because she turned back and looked at Sodom. I don't think that actually happened. What happened was the lore around those salt pillars that come up out of the Dead Sea, one of them became the story of Lot's wife. That does not take away from the power. Thing go. When it's over, don't look back and long for it. The Dr. Seuss statement is don't cry that it's over, smile that it happened. So that's what I believe the word is. And I'm just going to believe that I got it said today. I feel satisfied in my soul. If you can get closure in a situation, get it. If you can't get it, at a certain point, if you realize there's an apology that you're owed that you're never going to get, then for your own sake, you're going to have to forgive the person and move on. Otherwise, they end up calling the shots too much in your life. So you need to get some clarity. And if you need a third party to help you through that, then talk to somebody. If you can give closure, if you can put a period at the end of the sentence, if you can give an omega to your alpha, then do it. Do it for your own sake so that you can untether yourself and move into your now. I'm so aware of how time is passing. I was listening to a podcast last night, and somebody referred to they were talking about aging. And I don't know if any of you in my generation remember Kitty Carlisle. She used to be she was an actress. She was in a Marx Brothers movie, and she was married to the Broadway producer Moss Hart. But she's mostly known for, back in the late 50s, early 60s, she was on a lot of those panel shows like What's My Line and To Tell the Truth. She's famous for saying that every night, she lived to be 95, and she's famous for saying that every night she would look at herself in the mirror and say, "I forgive you," which that's a great, she's talking to herself, which is a great practice. But I'd never heard this. Somebody asked her, "What's the thing that you notice most about aging?" And she said, "Breakfast is every 15 minutes." And I knew exactly what she meant. Like, I feel like some mornings when I get up, you know, I've got my routine. I get up, find my glasses, pick up my phone, look at my messages, because there's usually some prayer requests and some emergencies. And I go over to the Keurig and I, you know, put the coffee in, because Ken's not there. He's gone on to work. And some mornings I do it and I think, I swear I just did this. And it feels like you're in one of those movie montages where it's showing the quick procession of time. I'm only saying that to say you don't feel that way when you're really young. A day is forever when you're really, really young. As you get older, you need to learn these things so that you, when you do come to the end of this life, you'll get all your business finished. It makes me really sad when I talk to an elderly person that I can tell didn't learn their stuff. They didn't get their closure. They didn't get the omega to their alpha. That makes me really sad, and it also makes me want to learn from their experiences. Because when you talk to an older person who's really aged gracefully, if you'll notice, they don't have a lot of access to grind. They're not combative. They're more live and let live. You believe what you want to believe. They're not just in this thing all the time. And that's what should happen as you get older. It was even in my memory today, something I wrote 4 years ago. I was talking about, the more you love yourself, it actually is nearly counterintuitive. Because the more you love yourself, the more you realize everything isn't about you, and it doesn't have to be about you. It seems like it would be the opposite, but because self-love is not conceit, it really, the more you love yourself, the more you're able to let stuff go, and you don't have a point to prove. And as you get older, people should want to be with you more. You know, that's what, you know, I want to be that kind of guy. That is, you know, when I become really elderly, I want to be so serene and at peace with God and at peace with life, that people say, oh, I just want to be in his presence. I want to be like he's learned so much in his life. I want to be a sage. I want to be like a guru. I want to be a shaman. I want to be the guy that's been through his stuff and he's not mad at anybody. He's forgiven everybody. And I want to be that guy. You know, when you're young and, you know, you're figuring it all out, those are your fighting days. But as you get older, you just need to be at peace, where you're like Moses just leaning on his staff and giving up the ghost. Or Jesus saying, it is finished. You know, it's saying, or Paul saying, I fought a good fight, I've kept the faith. Enoch. Enoch had this testimony that he pleased God and he was not. In other words, Enoch got so highly evolved that he just went to the next dimension. Like that, we don't even have any recorded death for him. We don't for Elijah either, because he supposedly went up in a chariot of fire. But the point is, that should be the goal. That you're getting to a place where you fixed your stuff and you can just enjoy. Like yesterday, we had errands to run, and it was just like one of those Saturdays where there was no deadline. We got up when we wanted to get up. There was a piece of furniture that we bought that somehow got damaged and we couldn't find a replacement for it. And Ken had looked for a plan B. And finally I said, you know what? Why don't you just put it together? I think it's going to be fine. I think that little flaw in it is going to be a non-issue, which it is. He put it together and it's beautiful. And it was just like we went and had Mexican food and we just did stuff. Like we went to Target and we went to Ross and just like little this and that. I picked up some Christmas ornaments. This year I'm not gonna do my Atlanta tree like I do every year. I'm gonna go a different direction this year, and because I want to have some people over and I want it to look a certain way. And I thought, you know, I really just enjoyed this day. It's not like a high holy day. It's not some big crazy excitement. It was just like a great Saturday kicking around with the person I love the most, just enjoying being together. Many of you already have that relationship where you're so comfortable together that if you talk, it's fine. If you don't talk, it's fine. You know, it's like if somebody saw Ken and me together, they would probably say, y'all need to put your phones down and talk to each other. That's not the way we are. We're both sitting there looking at our phones, talking to each other about it. Like, hey, did you see so-and-so's on vacation? Oh, did you see this picture of so-and-so? Look at this thing's in my face. I mean, the phones do not separate us. We're communicating together about them. But even if they were, we're grown-ass men. I don't need to say, put your phone down and pay attention to me. Like, I know he wants to be with me. Like, we're just enjoying being. That's where you should be. As you age, you should become so serene that, you know, Paul got to a place that he said, you know, he wrote to the Philippians, he said, you know, I'm ready to go, to live as Christ, to die as gain. I think it's probably advantageous to you that I stick around because you guys need me. But if it was left up to me, I could just go on and it's fine. And it really is fine. Even when I talked to Debbie yesterday, I mean, she's weepy, as you should be. But we were also very philosophical about it. And I said, you know, it's just, it just is what it is, and you dread the passing of a parent so much, and then when it happens, you're like, well, that's what that's like. And I said, your kids will go through it. Our kids will go through it with us. It's just a rite of passage, and it's not the end of anything. It's just the next. It's just the, it is finished going to the next thing. You're going to enjoy life so much more if you'll get hold of this and stop grasping and clawing everything and holding on to everything and being like Mary Magdalene wanting to lock Jesus into how she perceived him. You know, there are some people that don't get the way I minister now, who still call me regularly to pray for them. And I want to say to them, I don't think I'm the guy to pray for you because you disagree with me so much theologically. I don't think I have any authority in your life. You need to pray for somebody that believes like you believe, because I don't believe that. So that's why, like, my Metron people, they can just text me and say, be in agreement, so-and-so, and I'll be like, done, emoji, agreed. And the thing happens. I'll get like an hour later, I'll get a text back. Thank you. It worked out exactly. It would be so ludicrous for those of you who are in my world, on my level, in my purview, tuned into the same frequency. How bogus would it sound for you to call me and say, oh, Bishop, would you call on his name? And I'd be like, Almighty God, we beseech thee. I mean, that's not even the way I talk. You just say, agree with me, done, got it, it happens. And it happens over and over and over again. Most of the religious stuff that people do that they call prayer is not prayer at all. It's theatrics. Once you've already done that and you're out of it, then when you get around people who are still in it, you're like, oh, wow. I didn't realize how bogus this sounded when I was one of these people. Anyway, you got it. You understand what I'm saying. And I love you for tuning in. I'll read your comments in a moment. If you you're coming to the end of the year, if you want to make sure you've got all your tax stuff straight for your giving, you know, you just have a few more days to whatever you wanted to give in 2021. You can just log on to bishinthenow.com, and it's just literally clicking a button to give. Those of you that like to give to me personally, that's awesome. I receive it. You won't get any tax credit for that, but I appreciate the immediacy of it. And one's not better than the other. The only thing that's different about when you give to me directly is I know about it immediately. But I don't, you know, I stay out of the financial part of it a lot. But apparently people are still giving because, you know, we're still here. Metron community is alive and well. And I love all you guys that are a part of it. I hope to see you. I'll be back up here next week. But I hope to see you. Since I mentioned Shirley, if you want to know about her service, it's next Saturday the 20th at 11 a.m. at Scott Ward there in Conyers. And I really hope to see you on December 5th. I think Eddie's going to sing for us, and Kevin and Elisa are going to do some music, maybe some other people. But especially on December 15th, it's gonna be a hoot. And I'll say more about that as we get closer to it. All right? I got mad love for you. Love you so much. If I could come to this phone and kiss you right now, I would. Be blessed. If something I said today stirred up something in you, then make your declaration. It is finished, and move on. All right? I'll see you later. Peace.